Okay, and hello, this is Joel Friedlander from thebookdesigner.com and authortoolkits.com, and thanks for making time today to come to this webinar presentation. I'm here today with Dave Chilton. I'll be telling you a little bit more about him in a moment, but before we get started, I want to make sure everybody understands the GoToWebinar control panel that's on the right side of your screen. We have checked all the audio and video connections. Everything is working just fine. If you have any problems with your audio or video, I have a couple of suggestions for you. One is you can leave the webinar and then use the link that you used to enter it and just enter it again. Now, that will cure most people's problems. In the event that doesn't help you, your fallback is to get in touch with GoToWebinar support. They're really friendly people, and they will actually get on the phone and get you connected. Now, failing that, or if you don't have time or the disposition to fool around with that, we are recording this session, and I'll be sending out a link to the replay video either later today or first thing tomorrow. Okay, so if you have any questions, you know, use the question box. We will have a Q&A session at the end of the conversation. So if you have questions, you could put them in there, and we'll try to get to them at the end. For now, I'd like to introduce you to our guest today, Dave Chilton. Dave is actually in finance. He's kind of an investment advisor and a venture capitalist. But Dave actually started early in his career. He wrote a book, as many of us have, called The Wealthy Barber. And he published that himself. And that book has gone on to become one of the best-selling books, Canadian books ever published, with over 2 million copies sold. Dave went on to publish a lot of other books and has had huge success in book publishing. And I met Dave because he called me up out of the blue one day to ask me what I thought of the course he was thinking of doing in teaching authors how to market their books. This is the biggest problem most authors face, and you people know that because constantly I get this request, and in answers to surveys, people tell me they really have trouble figuring out how to market their books. You're in the right place today. That's exactly what we're going to talk about. And without further ado, what I'd really like to do is start off with one idea, because Dave has a lot of ideas. And I've been through part of his training course, which we'll talk about later in the presentation. And it is very dense with information. So just buckle yourself up. What I want to talk about first is this whole idea that I haven't really run into anyplace else that Dave brought up about using excerpts from books to both increase profits and also to spread your brand awareness of what you're writing about. So, Dave, why don't you talk to us a little bit about that idea? What is an excerpt and how do you do that?
Well, Joel, you're going to laugh, but I'm actually embarrassed that you started with that one because it was a weak spot of our great marketing efforts for a few years. We had a couple big deals, one with Wells Fargo, one with Arthur Andersen, of physical excerpts. So instead of selling the full book into the corporate arena, we would sell a 32-page or a 64-page excerpt. And we did a couple of those, but they were unsolicited. We spread our wings and reached out to people, and sure enough, a couple got back to us. But maybe 5, 6, 7 years ago, Terry Palmer, name you may know, one of the higher-ups at Wiley, showed me the success they were having with physical excerpts of their dummies books. And she sent me a lot of examples. And I started looking at them. They were as small as 4x8, some of them were 32 pages, some 64. And I went, oh my gosh, holding them in my hand, I now get why they're doing so well. They're so inexpensive to ship. In fact, often free, because what happens is the purchasing company puts them into an envelope of materials they're already sending out. And they're not thick enough nor heavy enough to add to the shipping cost. But of course, the printing costs are very low. You can often print 100,000, 200,000 for 30 cents, 40 cents, 45 cents. And therefore, you bring a whole new marketplace in that wouldn't have spent $2 and $3 and $4 for a full book, but they'll spend $1, $1.50 for an excerpt. But there's another bigger advantage. It's easy within a book to find a message that matches the company's message. The full book doesn't have to anymore, just a segment does. So I'll give you an example. The Wealthy Barber Returns, my second book, I talked in the middle for 3 or 4 chapters about index funds and why for a lot of people, passive investing is a better approach. Well, Vanguard looks at something like that and says, that's fantastic. We can do a 32-page excerpt of that and ship it out along with our third quarter mailing type thing. All kinds of possibilities. With the cookbooks I was involved with, they take just the beef recipes and they go to the beef council. and they sell them an excerpt. It's amazing all the good things that can happen here. You know what's funny about this idea? We have yet to approach a chief marketing officer from any company out there who hasn't got it right away. The brand gets in front of people for months and months and months. They tend to keep the excerpts around indefinitely. It's relatively inexpensive. They get to message match perfectly. There's so many positives here, and yet most publishers don't pursue any deals in this space, Wiley being the exception. Since the course came out, we've had several course buyers get all the details about the physical excerpt space and how to pitch them, and they've already struck mega deals, $75,000, $110,000. Remember, the course has only been out for a couple months.
Yeah.
So this is fertile ground that very few self-publishers, very few traditional publishers are bothering to farm, and I'm telling you, it's lucrative. And the thing I love about it is when the excerpts get out there, two things happen. You get a ton of word of mouth. You start getting your brand exposure, your brand awareness growing, but also a strange percentage of the people who receive the physical excerpt go out and buy the full book. If they like what they read, they like the writing style, they like the cover, et cetera, they naturally pick it up on Amazon or in their local bookstore, and all good things come of this. In essence, it's a profit center for your advertising. Well, you don't get many of those. So we didn't do enough of it early, but we've learned our lesson, and we have a lot of other authors doing it now. And I would say of all the areas in corporate sales, in some respects, it's the one that has the most promise.
So in other words, you're, and these are paid up front. So in other words, you're printing 100,000 because you've got to deal with a corporation.
Always you have the order. Yeah, so if you look at one of our cases, Arthur Anderson, I think they bought a quarter million.
They're using them for promotion. So do you like brand the books? Like if you do them for Charles Schwab, do you print Charles Schwab right their branding right on the book?
Absolutely. So they'll be on the cover and they love that because of the branding. You have to be sure you don't give them an endorsement beyond just their brand. Mm-hmm. But we do a lot of that. And again, it works out wonderfully well. Let me give you the math of a sample example that we saw go through a couple of years ago. The person did 400,000 units. This was a self-publisher. And they printed the books for the excerpts for 40 cents and they sold them for 90 cents. That's $200,000 in profit. Okay. And that's before you've got the word of mouth and before you have the echo impact on the physical book purchase. So these are great deals, very inexpensive to pitch. I mean, you put together 10, 15 kits with your nice pitch letter. You can put together a sample excerpt and you send it out to the people in the marketing departments at the various firms. For the most part, they're very responsive because they don't get pitches along these lines. And they're at least intrigued enough to take your next call or to get back to you. We find the hit rate has been surprisingly high considering the size of the deals.
You know, it's really a fantastic concept because, you know, I mean, I've been preaching for many years to publishers, to authors, self-publishers about giving away stuff, giving away books, giving away pieces of books, giving away the first chapter of the books, just giving stuff away. And the fact of the matter is, it's really a challenge for many self-publishers to give away more than like 10 copies because they don't know anybody to give them to. So somehow, but the idea of like interesting people in your work, showing them exactly what's in the book, because these are actual excerpts from the book, that's a very powerful way to sell, and bringing in the corporation to actually do, you know, distribute them and pay you for your own advertising, that's pretty sweet, Dave. I mean, I'm really attracted to that myself, and I'm getting ready to publish a book later this year, and now you've got me, the wheels are moving.
No, it is truly a great idea. And again, by nature, the deals are all big. Nobody does the physical excerpt idea for 10 and 15 and 20,000 copies. The kinds of companies doing these are looking at volumes of 50,000, 100,000, 200,000. In fact, Wiley struck several deals for $500,000 or more. So by nature, they're very big deals. And as I say, don't sleep on the echo impact of this in terms of brand awareness and physical book sales. It's very significant. So you've got this advertising model. It's turned into its own huge profit center. And remember, there's no risk here. You're only printing the books when you've got the order in hand from a very big, solid company. Often you can get prepayment, by the way, for 30 or 40% of the purchase order, and you can cover your printing costs up front too. So there's no negative here that I can see, because even pitching this is not that much work. You're not pitching hundreds of these. You're pitching 15 to 20.
Well, it's a brilliant idea, and like I say, I hope to have some personal experience when I bring this book out later this year, because there, you know, as soon as you said that about how you match up the content in the book, even if it's just a section or a few chapters, with the market demographics of the company that you're pitching. So in other words, as long as they appeal to the same audience, you have a potential deal. So I love that, and I think that self-publishers ought to become more aggressive about this kind of marketing, because there's a lot of money out there to be made, and a lot of awareness to be driven. I mean, imagine somebody sending out 100,000 excerpts of yours with your name and your website on it to all their customers. Wow, what's not good about that?
No, and we've made millions of dollars with this type of idea. And remember, it's not that deep, but for some strange reason, most independent publishers aren't doing it. In fact, as I said earlier, most major publishers aren't, strangely enough, doing it. I looked at a business book not that long ago, and certain sections were very well suited to excerpts and going after four or five competitors in each space. But there was other ones that were good for other competitors. This person could have just excerpted the book and pitched 150 different companies. Well, you're going to get one or two or three yeses. Yes, you're going to get a lot of rejection. That's the nature of all book marketing. But you're going to get a few successes there. And you imagine how big they are? This is the kind of thing authors have to do. And it's fun. You know, it's one of the things I talk about a lot in the course. Yes, rejection is never that much fun. But getting the kits out there, playing the numbers game, it really is a good experience.
Let's talk a little bit about PR. Now, we have publicists that we work with who helps us develop products for authors. We have a complete media kit product that's got like just every kind of thing you could think you might need in a media kit, which has really been very popular, Dave, because it makes it affordable for an indie author to actually put together a full-fledged media kit. But you've got a wrinkle on the media kit that's unique.
Yeah, we have a few. To be perfectly honest, I mean, we've had a couple things over the years that we've come up with that have gone over incredibly well. I'll give you a quick example. This is probably the most impactful one. Maybe 20 years ago now, I published a book called Looney Spoons. It was a cookbook that went on to sell huge numbers, big hit on QVC in the States, big hit in Canada, sold 850,000 copies in Canada alone. And we were trying a radio campaign in the States, and we were doing it through Peg Booth, a very good publicist out in California. But frankly, it wasn't going that well on the radio because a lot of the hosts were very conservative about how good can radio interviews be about food. You have no visual component. And wouldn't the questions be a little bit stagnant, et cetera, and the audience wouldn't love it. So we struggled. Well, we made one change, and you cannot believe the difference. One day, Peg Booth said to me, Janet Parshall loves the sisters. She thinks they're phenomenal. And I thought, that's Janet Parshall, syndicated columnist on the radio who people love and respect. Let's get a testimonial from her. And she sent a testimonial through saying the sisters were as good an interview as she's come across. We reached out to four other radio hosts and did the same thing. We took those five testimonials and put them on one piece of paper, and the campaign went from struggling to one of the best I've ever seen. When Peg reached out to people, she said, read those testimonials. Remember, radio hosts, TV hosts, whomever, all they want is someone who's bringing on compelling content that's relevant to their audience and can present it in an articulate, entertaining fashion. So they see these testimonials. That's a heuristic. That's a shortcut for them. They think, good, what's the best thing that can happen is we've got eyewitness testimony from our colleagues, from our trusted colleagues. So Peg pointed out that sheet and the booking started going way up. But some people we couldn't reach to point the sheet out. So then we made another change. We took almost everything else out of the kit and we sent out the smallest kit you'll ever see. It had sample questions underneath, but the top page was the five testimonials and a handwritten note from Peg. We booked over 500 radio interviews on that campaign, over 500 radio interviews. And this is one of the things I talked about in the course. There's so much out there about what to do, but there's not enough out there about how to do it. The devil is in the details. It's all about the execution and watching the little things. Think about this campaign. I mean, yeah, it's all about getting radio, but the two subtle changes took us from not doing well to doing quite well to doing almost absurdly well. That producer's testimonial kit, it's amazing to me. People still aren't using them. It's 20 years later. We have all the authors we help use them. They all come back and say it's amazingly impactful, and yet most publishers don't use them. I meet almost no independent publisher who use them. It's a no-brainer to make those a big part of your focus going forward.
So in other words, what you're doing is you're cutting a lot of the fat out of the media kit, and what you're doing is really emphasizing by putting it right on top is testimonials from actual show hosts about how great a guest this person is, the author is. And that's what you're leading with, and that's what's giving you all that fantastic response, because 500 interviews, you have an author made out of steel just to be able to do. Now, I would just want to mention for people on the call, you know, radio interviews are really a goldmine for authors if you like doing that kind of thing. Because, you know, if you think about radio, radio is underappreciated. But, you know, everybody listens to the radio, even if it's just in their car. And the radio shows, you know, they have a lot of time they have to fill. So their number one source of guests is authors. Hey, big surprise. So I think that's brilliant. And obviously, it wouldn't take many interviews before you could get your five testimonials.
No, and you said all that very well about radio. It's so underestimated. We've gone to the digital era, and too many people have falsely assumed that radio is no longer impactful. 90% of people still listen to the radio about to the same level they used to because of your point around the car. But the other thing is, the radio listener is the book buyer. Okay, we know that from all the research we've done. These people are constantly looking for guests. And to take your point a step further, if you do a great job in a radio interview, you constantly get invited back to the same show two, three, four, five times. You establish a rapport, it gets better and better over time. I think radio interviews are way underestimated. We still do a tremendous number of them. The authors we help do more and more and more. They find they can do them from the comfort of their own home. There's no travel, there's no hassle factor, and yet their impact on site visits, on book sales, it's all positive across the board. But I'm telling you, I know I'm being a little pushy on this particular idea, but everybody listening to this has to use this idea. When we go out and interview radio hosts and radio producers, they tell us over and over again they love this idea because, again, it's a shortcut for them. Instead of having to read the kit carefully and go through the book, they get the one piece of information they most want. Yes, this person's a good interview. Yes, this person's already been on nationally syndicated shows. Yes, this person is articulate and can convince people to view things differently. That's what they need to hear, and they hear it five times, and the bookings go through. Do not sleep on this idea.
That's probably what they want to hear more than anything else. How big an expert you
Absolutely.
are, or how many awards you won, all of that stuff. Yeah, that's fine. But if you're a great guest, that's what they're looking for. That's the goal right there.
You nailed it.
You know, the other thing I love about radio is, like you said, you could sit at home and do it and perfectly well, but you're always local at the other end. You know, if you're on a local radio, you're talking to somebody. I've done these interviews. I was on with a Omaha radio station in Nebraska. And, you know, they're broadcasting to people in Omaha. That's who's listening. And so it's hype, very hyper local at that end. But for me, I'm just sitting here in Santa Fe talking on the phone. So I
Well, and
love that idea.
I used to do as many as five, six, seven, 10 a day, not even when we were launching the books. I mean, at any time you set up five, six, seven a day. Well, you add at the end of the week, you've done 30 and 40 interviews. You're in front of tens of thousands of people. I mean, the impact this has on your business is incredible. And the hassle factor is so low. It sounds like five is a lot, but remember, a lot of them are 10 and 15 minutes in length. Maybe that's a little over an hour's time. Well, that's not much of a burden if I'm doing it from the comfort of my office. Plus, nowadays, I can go online to the radio station's page, and I can listen to a sample interview from those same hosts and get a feel for their flow, their humor, their seriousness, how they approach things. And even if I only listen to a couple minutes, it makes me a much better interviewee when I go back on the show. So radio is phenomenal. Very few book marketers use it enough. I still think, in fact, in some ways, it might be the ultimate book marketing PR tool.
Well, as far as penetration into people's brain, into thinking, there's nothing like radio. You really can't compare it to anything. And so I'm a big fan. And the fact of the matter is, most of the interviews you book are probably going to be 15 minutes. They're not going to be long interviews. You're not going to sit
I
down for
agree.
an
In the
hour.
old days, yeah, in the old days you had more of the long ones, but they have shortened them up a little bit. And the course, by the way, has video after video talking about how to pitch radio, how to put the kit together, how to send it to the right person. Those types of subtle details are very important. What time you want to get on. All those types of things matter, and they really can make a big difference. In fact, it's stunning if you look at the difference between the audience at 8 o'clock and the audience at 9 o'clock on most radio shows for obvious reason. People are out of their car by 9 o'clock. All of those things matter. You have to turn them to your advantage. And a lot of it's common sense, yet most people in publishing and book marketing don't tend to think them through very carefully.
Well, and also, I mean, do you want to be like, you know, author number 15,000 on Facebook saying, hey, I just published my book, buy it? Or would you like to have complete people's complete attention for 15 minutes in an intimate setting? Because it's actually kind of intimate when you're talking to people with your own voice. You know, that's a whole different thing. This is a phenomenal way to market your books. And really, I totally agree with Dave. You should not ignore it. And I'll give you one more tip. Dave said, go to the radio station's webpage and listen for a couple of minutes to the host. Do that before you write your query letter. You'll write a much better query letter if you know who you're writing it to. Trust me, it makes a big
Hey,
difference.
Joel, can I give you a really interesting tip from the course? And Alex
Really?
Carroll, who's taught people how to use radio for years, thought this was fantastic. He said, I've never heard that before. people are always wondering what radio shows should I be trying to get on? And you can buy the Cision data and you can do all kinds of research, but we found the single best way to pick the top shows is to phone the local bookstores, especially if there's an independent store still around a town, and say to the owner or manager, what radio show sells the most books? And that person ought to know, and they always do. And they constantly tell you which shows you should be booking. And we find the impact quotient of those shows is way higher than if we use the formal data. So it's a very informal way to do it. But I'm telling you, it's exceptionally effective over and over and over again.
Fantastic. Well, let's talk about Scott. Now, Scott is Dave's son, and he's involved in your business. So what you have this bullet point you gave us about the Netflix model. That's very intriguing to me. What's that story all about, Dave?
Well, I'll give you a little background on how Scott got involved in the course, because you'll get a kick out of it. I decided a year and a half ago to put this course together and make no money from it, which I know is a bit odd. I did it selfishly because I was getting 1,000 plus requests a year for help. But also I wanted to give back. I thought it would take me 3 months. It took me 11, but we'll talk about that later. One of the firms that we partner with on the production front wanted to charge $1,295, which is pretty typical for these high-end 17-hour courses, but I wanted to reach out and touch as many people as possible. So I said, not a chance. I want it much less expensive. Scott stepped in and said, I'll produce it and distribute it. At first, he stunk at it. How's that for being honest? He had the wrong lighting. Nothing went right, but he figured it all out, and now the course is very, very good. Yeah, it's very good. The videos are outstanding now. But the Netflix idea, his real living comes from he helps independent authors to sell their books into special sales arenas. Hmm. And this is truly a fascinating story. When The Wealthy Barber Returns came out 5 or 6 years ago, I went to one of Canada's online banks. And I said, I think this matches your message very well. The CEO read the book, loved it, and bought a copy for every employee. I was obviously thrilled. I said, what about giving it out to your clients? And he thought about it and came back and said, we can't. We don't deal directly with them physically. We'd have to mail it. It's too expensive. So 3 years later, when Scott got involved in his business, he came to me and said, I have a better idea. Let's get them to distribute the ebook. Well, pretty obvious, but yet I hadn't thought of it. And I said, okay, go ahead and pursue that. So he phones the CEO, he phones the chief marketing officer, and they said, here's the problem. We do so many tests of so many different online marketing initiatives. We're trying to get contact information. We're trying to get people through onboarding. We're trying to get people to the site. We don't know which one of these is going to work. We don't know how many books we would need. Plus, we need to keep the unit cost ultra low. About 2 days later, Scott comes back to me and says, Dad, I want to offer them the Netflix model. And I said, I'm not even sure what you mean by that. He said, I'm going to give them a chance to do unlimited downloads of your ebook for one flat fee. That way, it doesn't matter how many copies they go through, and they can test all kinds of different initiatives. Let's see what they say. Well, I was reserved because I said it better be a lot of money, because they're doing unlimited numbers, and plus they may cannibalize my more traditional sales a little bit. Well, listen to this, Joel. He got $400,000 for that deal. Remember, that all goes to our bottom line. There's no printing cost. There's no cost, period. But the other benefits go back to our point about physical excerpts. All of a sudden, we've got our brand in all of their testing. All of their online initiatives are mentioning The Wealthy Barber Returns. So the echo impact of that is very significant. And all kinds of people who got the ebook go out and buy the physical book. In fact, it was funny how many people used the expression, I want to go get the real book. I laughed how often we heard that. People called the physical book the real book. So from every perspective, this was a dream deal for us. Now, I'm not saying everybody listening today is going to strike $400,000 deals, but in the corporate sales and partnerships arena, with physical excerpts, with e-excerpts, with bulk ebook sales, and then with your traditional physical book sales, there's so many different ways to tackle corporate sales and partnerships right now. It's shocking that most publishers and most indies aren't pursuing any of them, because they're incredibly lucrative, they're low cost to pursue, they're fun, and they have huge echo impacts when they actually go through. And we're talking lucrative deals here. I mean, even if you don't get a big deal like $400,000, most of these deals are into the tens of thousands of dollars in terms of their profitability. I think that section of the course, I'm very proud of the course, but I think that section of the course alone is worth way more at the course price, because it walks you through all the details of how to go after these types of deals.
Look, the course is a gold mine, and I will have more to say about that. But why don't we keep going on this? You know, because I think this whole idea of selling to corporations, selling them for promotional reasons, selling, you know, doing this ebook deal, you know, I think a lot of indie authors, they just don't ever think about that this is a possibility for them. You know, their goals maybe are much smaller, but you really have to open your mind and realize that if you've created something that's useful to people, that you have a real asset and you can leverage that asset in many ways. Why don't you tell us about the deal you made with Coke?
I will, but before I do, you're very well spoken. You really are. And you said all that extremely well.
Thank
When you have a well-done book, it is an asset. But it's
you.
not just an asset to you. Because people trust good books and trust authors, it can become an asset to somebody who's after the same target demographic that you are. And you can leverage that. And I'll tell you how frustrated I get with big publishers. They'll spend a year and year and a half doing the heavy lifting, creating a brand by getting a book to bestseller list tops and doing all the wonderful things. And then after they've done all that heavy lifting, they don't exploit the opportunities by going out and striking the partnerships. They're so much easier to get when the brand is established. So I shake my head at some of what I see because, again, the possibilities here are endless. When people watch those videos, they're going to go, "Holy smokes, I never thought of any of that." The Coke deal is an extreme example and a very fun one. I talk about this all times at publishing symposiums, and companies like Random House and HarperCollins have all had me in to talk about deals like this. But this one's quite cute. You remember Tom and Marilyn Ross? They
Sure.
wrote the complete, Encyclopedia of Self-Publishing. I knew them well. And they sent me a copy of their second book, Jumpstart Your Book Sales, when it was in manuscript form, hoping for a testimonial. And I was reading through it in the office one day, and there was a clip in there about how Coca-Cola had done research and determined that the primary buyer of Diet Coke, not surprisingly, was adult females. So they got the marketing idea to do a cross-promotion with Harlequin around romance novels. I read this and I thought, okay, romance novels maybe, but not all women like romance novels. I think I have a better idea. Why don't they use a healthy cookbook like ours? Because obviously, if you're calorie conscious drinking Diet Coke, you probably want to eat more healthfully. So I walked down the hall and I pitched this to the two cookbook authors, Janet and Greta Podleski. And Janet says to me, "Yes, that makes perfect sense. Go phone Coke." Well, how do you go phone Coke? You're not just going to go phone Coke, but I did. I walked down the hall. I picked up the phone. I got in touch with Coke. The receptionist answered, and I said, "Can I please speak to the Diet Coke person?" And she said, "You mean the brand manager?" And I said, "Yeah, I didn't want to use jargon." And she brings on a woman named Arlene Leibovic. And I described my entire line of thinking in 5 minutes, almost just like I did to you right now. And she goes, "That's a great idea. Let's do it." Have you ever heard of anything so crazy? I pitched one of the biggest companies in the
5 minutes,
world
that's pretty
for
good.
5 minutes. And they said, "Yes." We ended up getting on 5.5 million cases of Diet Coke and 2 liter bottles with this promotion. They set up a third deal with a restaurant chain. The whole thing was unbelievable. The exposure, the momentum. Plus, of course, we harnessed that to get all kinds of public relations because the media thought, how did these two sisters working out of their basement end up partnering with Coca-Cola on a major project? And the reason I tell that story is because it is a little corny to say this. It's Tony Robbins-like, but it's motivating because it reminds the indies out there, this is not impossible. We were a three-person team working at a very humble location. They worked out of their basement. And we called up the biggest company or one of the biggest companies in the food business in the world and got that deal. We also did a deal with Nabisco on cracker boxes, millions of cracker boxes with soup recipes. And I always laugh and say to people, they say, "Well, how did you get that? Why did you do that? What did you come up with that?" I said, "Well, we had great soups and they had crackers. This isn't that deep." So how you put the pitch together often matters. You've got to make sure you attract their attention. You know the biggest single word in book marketing, Joel? Intrigue.
Intrigue.
That's the
Okay.
single most important, whether it's trying to generate PR or trying to generate corporate sales and partnerships, in your first effort, whether it's a phone call, whether it's a kit, no matter what, you have to intrigue the other side. You have to have something in their brain go, "That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. That's different." But here's the good news. People love books. Books are one of the few things in society that, in people's mind's eye, are worth way more than their actual price. People love the gift of a book. Everything about them is positive, yet the publishing industry doesn't harness all of this. So that Coke example is just one more of the kinds of things that are available if only people would pursue them.
I'd also like to mention here, Dave, that even though we're deep into the internet era, everybody's carrying a smartphone in their pocket, ebooks are selling like crazy. Despite all that, print book sales continue to increase. So there is obviously in the public, there's a deep affection and drive to own print books. People love printed books. And I think any indie author should recognize that. And you know, what's going to happen to ebooks? We don't know. Sales have been up, sales have been down. It's very hard to do accurate record keeping on some of these things because of you know, all the ways that people publish. But keep in mind, People love print books. They really do. And that's why sales continue to go up. But
Well,
Dave,
last year in particular.
here's a topic that's going to interest everyone, and that is social media. Now, the typical indie author, from my experience, figures, well, they're driven to write the book for whatever reason. I'm not going to say what that is. That's just an individual thing. And then they figure, okay, well, I'm going to go on Facebook, or I'll start blogging, or I'll do all that stuff, and that's how I'm going to market my book. What do you think about that?
I would say in my 30 years doing this, that's where we've seen the most crazy behavior of any space. My assistant Maureen is over there and she is nodding her head. We have so many authors, literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of authors in the last 2 years alone have come to us and they've put in hundreds and hundreds of hours creating their blog and tweeting and they have no followers, almost no readers, and they've sold almost no books. I'm not saying it's always a waste of time, but in a lot of ways, there are better ways to dedicate your resources. For example, go after the people in your space who already have the following, who already have the types of people you're after, and have them expose your book through a review, through an interview, through a mention. Those are the types of things that really make a big difference. It's hard to build a following, and there's a myth out there that you build a following and then sell them books. That's not true. In most cases, you sell books, build your brand power through book sales, and that gets you the following. What happened, I think, is a lot of the best book marketing consultants out there taught build a platform because it worked for them, but they were doing it full time and they had a lot of different products to sell, not just a book, but consulting services, courses. The lifetime value of the client for them justified putting all the work into creating the content, trying to build the following. For most of the people watching right now, they just have a book or two books, and therefore it's not the same scenario. They're much better, again, to go out and find the people already connected to their target demographic. Harness the power of their connections, and that's how you build your exposure. You know the line from the famous movie, "Build it and they will come." Great movie line. It does not work in book marketing. And we see this over and over again. One quick story I think captures all this. We had a lady call us back in March, and she had for 2 years been trying to build a blog following, a Twitter following, all those types of things. She was on Facebook. She took the course. This was right when it came out. I'm talking a couple weeks in. And she came back to us and said, "I've already generated 60-something radio interviews and several podcast interviews, and I've sold more books in 2 or 3 weeks than I sold in 2 years of doing the other approach." And that didn't surprise me at all, and I'm sure it doesn't surprise you. You mentioned the intimacy of radio. And plus, with those interviews, she's talking specifically about her book, why she did it, why it can be impactful, et cetera. Often with content marketing, you're 2 steps removed from the book story. So again, I'm not saying never do those things, but they should be back shelf. There's more important ways and more impactful ways to market your books.
Well, that's a good point. And in fact, what you start off with, the whole context is really important, because a lot of times people see things from the outside, but they don't really understand the logic of it from the inside. And my story is very similar, because I went on the web and started blogging to support a business. Okay,
Right.
so I was able to put in a huge amount of time and effort, research, and I was writing and publishing 5 articles a week. Brand new content. Now that's crazy. I wouldn't do it today. But the reason is, I wasn't just selling a book. I had a business behind me where I was doing book design and production for authors, and those jobs typically are worth thousands of dollars. So I could afford to put that time in, and I had something else, and people would say, "Well, why are you giving everything away?" I was giving it away for a selfish reason, and that is
Right.
because that demonstrated that I was actually an expert at what I was doing. And it really worked out well. But I do agree completely. If you don't really understand what you hope to gain, how it works, just throwing yourself into the maelstrom of, like, Facebook updates and Goodreads and Twitter, you're going to end up frustrated and unhappy and disappointed. And I don't want to see that happen. And that's one of the reasons why I want to talk to Dave, because he's got a much better way to do it.
Well, you know what's interesting is how many people have taken the course and gotten back to Scott and said one of the things they felt was relief because they've been trying all those things you talked about and having no success whatsoever. And again, Maureen and I have seen it over and over again. You pointed out you had a very high lifetime value of a client because they're spending thousands of dollars on covers. If your lifetime value of the client is one book sale, There's no way you can justify that kind of hourly involvement in blogging and so on and so forth. In fact, I think you're better to pick one of those platforms, let's say it's Twitter, and become very good at it. Focus energies on one platform and go from there. Even the website, and I think websites can be very important. The media often looks at them. In the corporate sales market, they may go to your website and look at it before they make a commitment. So I'm pro website. But the amount of time and effort some people put into their website and constantly refreshing its content when they don't have anybody coming there is a little wacky. You've got to get people there for that to be impactful, and often that's not thought through.
It's backwards. And there is quite a bit of content on websites in the course. And I think that's really helpful to people because, you know, people make a lot of mistakes with their websites, and that's another asset you can leverage if you do it properly.
Well, we were pretty aggressive in the course about websites because, to be honest with you, we think most author websites are pretty bad. Yeah. And even a lot of the ones that are slick and professional and well edited, they don't do the things they're supposed to do. And, you know, one of the things the website really is trying to do or should be trying to do is make people want more. That's its primary objective. They come to the website, whether they're a radio show host or whether they're a corporate sales potential partner, whether they're a reader that may buy your book, your website's supposed to, again, intrigue them and make them want more. Well, one place you can go that won't make them want more is if you're boring. And too many of the websites are boring. And you've done a very good job of staying away from that and also providing a lot of solid content people can right away apply. There's a practicality to what you're saying, but a lot of websites don't do that. They're very general. You know, we talk too much about content marketing, but I'll tell you what doesn't work is bad content hyphen marketing. And we see a lot of bad content. The blogs aren't well done. And so I'll see examples of where a very well-known radio host is somehow pushed to a website, they'll get that person to go, and there's a blog in the middle of the website that's poorly done. Well, how can that be in anybody's best interest? That makes no sense to me. And I wouldn't bring it up if it was the exception. It tends to be more the rule. And so I get a little frustrated by all this, as you can see, because there are so many wonderful books out there that if people, again, dedicated their resources to the right way to market them, they would do 10 times better than they do.
Well, that's what drives me, Dave, because I know the kind of effort and passion that people put into their books, and I just hate to see that just all kind of dribble away because they don't have a clue about what to do next. Talking about next, I know that you're also, you know, a lot of people try to get their books into bookstores. It could be really hard. It's not always a very good business for indie publishers to try and push a book into bookstores all over the country. Mm-hmm. Because it has a lot of downsides to it that you might not know about. But, you know, there are a lot of other places that sell books, and that can represent a real opportunity for authors with the right book. Now, you've put your books into a lot of
weird,
unusual distribution channels.
You know what's funny is, we honestly, I'm not exaggerating, I've probably had 5 to 10 major publishers. I'm talking the biggest in the world. Phone us over the years and say, how the heck do you get your books into some of those places? And people think we're going to give them this crazy deep answer with all kinds of cleverness. I'm not that sharp. I'll tell you exactly how we do it. We find what we think is a good demographic match, and then we make it impossible for the potential partners to say no to a test. And I can illustrate that best with an example. When Janet and Greta's book came out, Looney Spoons, their first cookbook years ago, I thought I wouldn't mind getting this into hair salons. Hair salons are dominated by women. 90% of their buyers were women. You're often sitting in the hair salon. I thought it was a good match. So I went to one of the major distributors to hair salons, and honestly, the woman laughed at me. She said, I'm not putting a cookbook in hair salons. This is the dumbest idea I've ever seen. And she was very polite, but she was not happy with the idea and wasting of the time. So all I did was I went to two hair salons that were very well known, very reputable. She obviously serviced them, and therefore they had credibility. And I convinced the owners to take free books, free. I didn't charge her anything for 20, 25 books, whatever the number was. It's a small amount of money based on the printing cost. And I said, here's a nice stand. See if these sell. They sold through incredibly quickly. And then I get the two hair salon owners calling the distributor and saying, you should check this out. Women are sitting there getting their hair dry, or they're sitting there waiting. They love these cookbooks. They buy them off the stand. We sold a couple hundred dollars worth in a week. It's great margins, blah, blah, blah. And off we go. We sold thousands and thousands and thousands of cookbooks in hair salons. We sold The Wealthy Barber at a lube shop because I was getting my car lubed one day, and one of the fellows said, you should have your book here. The guy was waiting. I could read your book. And I thought, that's not that dumb an idea. So I contacted the head office. We tested it at two. It sold relatively well, and it went in. We didn't sell tens of thousands, but we sold a few thousand to the lube shop. We've had books in the Avon catalog. We had a bank, a major bank, sell The Wealthy Barber at the branches. All of these are based on the same simple approach. We give them free books or very cheap books to test in a small way so they have no risk and a very low hassle factor. Some deals don't work, I don't talk about those, but the deals that do work go on to big numbers. So for example, in the case of Avon, the first book alone sold, I think, 30 to 40,000 copies. That was just the first book. We put two or three into that catalog. None of this is as hard as people think, and it's not that expensive to try to execute on these things. And we go back to something you said earlier, people like printed books. So when you send the people the free book, they're happy to get it. It opens their eyes. They're not getting books from anybody else. So you stand out and you have an open-minded person when you make the phone call. They may say no, but at least they're open-minded to giving you your day in court. So we haven't done anything that crazy smart on these deals, but we've struck 10, 15, 20 of them over the years. And I don't see anybody else doing any of them. They may put their books in places like Costco. Obviously, we've done that or that type of thing. But you don't see books in veterinarian shops and all the different places we put them. And it's added up to be crazy numbers.
You know, I love that, Dave. And also, you know, I'd like people listening to this, the next time you're out shopping, like whether you're in a gardening store or you're in an architecture store or a home improvement store, you know, start noticing how many of these stores actually have books in them. You would be amazed at how many places sell books. You know, even if it's not their primary business, outdoor stores, you know, we've got a book section at a popular outdoor store here. It's all about, you know, hikes you can take in the area. Some of it's local, some of it's specialized content. The other thing is, you know, I used to sell a lot of books to catalogs because even gift catalogs, they have books in them. You know, if you look at them, I used to publish years ago New Age books. And we just started hitting on the catalogs because that was a big catalog business. People were buying aromatherapy and candles and medallions or whatever. And they were happy to have our books to put in their catalog. It really enhanced their catalog. And so start noticing all of these places that are actually selling books. And just like Dave said, the key here is to identify the distributors who are selling to those specialty stores, because that's who you're going to end up selling, is those distributors.
Well, you know what's interesting too, Joel, is that most of those sales, I would say 85 to 90% were non-returnable. And so we sold them at 50 to 55% off, maybe in a couple cases, 60% off, but non-returnable. We shipped to one location. You couldn't have had lower hassle deals. And again, one of the things that I want all of your listeners to hopefully grab onto and really remember is there's no business in the world like book publishing where success begets success more than this field. If you can build the momentum, the word of mouth will carry you. And if you get on three radio shows, getting on 13 starts becoming easy. If you get one major corporate partner, getting the second one becomes easier. So all of these are stepping stones. You get some of this odd distribution, it helps to open up other people's minds. So you're constantly looking for that. And again, if you can do it through non-returnable sales, to take all the risk out for you and all the hassle factor, why not? I mean, I've always laughed and said, why are we the only people pursuing these deals? Like, we really aren't that sharp, but yet almost nobody else goes after them. And so it's not only the places you mentioned that have a lot of books in them, but even places that have no books, like the hair salons, there's opportunity if you have the same demographic match.
And, you know, you just have to keep thinking. Like, I have a book called The Self-Publisher's Ultimate Resource Guide. It's really...
I own it.
It's a terrific book.
It is.
I sell that in bulk. I sell it to publishing and author groups at 50% off, cash on delivery, no returns. They're very happy to do it. They can sell them at a discount if they want to their members. They can sell them at retail and use it as a profit making thing for their group. And right. You know, for the publisher, it's perfect because they go directly from the printer to the buyer. I never see them. It's just a really good thing. But I know that we only have a certain amount of time here, Dave. And I know that on our webinar page, we kind of teased people about a new player in PR. And so I think we have to tell people what that's about.
Well, this has been a good learning experience for me because even when you're as old as I am, you can always pick up new tricks. One of the things I've done, I think it's really helped me in my career, is every time I'm talking to people, I ask them, where did you hear about your last nonfiction book purchase? Because it keeps you attuned as to what's working. And you still hear radio, you hear all kinds of things. You hear the mention, by the way. People get it mentioned on a tweet or mentioned by somebody prominent. But the one that's picked up incredible steam in the last 24 months, in fact, with millennials, it may now be number one, podcast interviews. Podcast mentions. It's amazing. You know, first off, a much higher percentage of Americans are listening to podcasts than most people realize. It's 20-something percent now and growing quickly of age 12 and older, but it's the book buyer. Think about it. When they listen to the podcast, they're picking that over listening to music. They're doing it while they work out, while they walk, while they drive their car. They're information junkies by nature. So they're the book buyer. They also tend to trust the podcast host. So if he or she recommends a book or does an interview, they're much more likely to act on that recommendation than they are in other medium. And the thing I love about the podcast listener is that he or she tends to be an amazing word of mouther. The same people that are passionate enough about listening to the podcast tend to be in all the chat rooms, they tend to be in all the forums. And so the echo impact from that particular group is the highest among any book buyers I've seen in all the years I've been doing this. So I think podcasts are very underestimated. We've had great success with them over the last year or two. We've had a lot of authors we help have written podcasts, frankly, to a lot of their sales. And again, especially if their books aimed at millennials, but even 35, 40, 45, it's starting to move up the age chain. So many good podcasts. Now, a lot of listeners think, well, there's no podcast in my subject area. Wrong. If you go on and Google podcasts on knitting, podcasts on homeschooling, podcasts on road hockey, there's podcasts on everything. Now, a lot of them don't have huge listenership, but they have important listeners. The people listening tend to, again, be the influencers, people most likely to be able to reach out and spread the word of mouth. Plus, the podcast interview doesn't take long. It's often 10, 15 minutes done from the comfort of your own home via Skype or via a traditional phone. None of this is too much of a burden. Some of the podcasts, by the way, have crazy numbers of listeners now. They're up to hundreds of thousands, in a few instances, millions. And again, millions of information junkies. If you get on Tim Ferriss's podcast, that might be better for your book sales than any single other thing in the United States now. So people are not pursuing these aggressively enough. They really are very impactful, and it's something you have to learn more about. And again, the course talks a lot about how to pitch them. How exactly do you get in touch with them? How do you find them? But also, how do you angle your pitch letter? What do you put in the kit? Those types of things are vitally important to having a high success rate.
Well, I said before, and I'll say it again, the course itself, and I just want to talk a little bit about the course. The course itself is an unbelievable gold mine of ideas, fresh approaches you've never heard of from anybody else or thought about, kind of similar to what Dave's been talking about, but much more extensive. He has sections on cover design, he has sections on your website. There's just a huge ton. Do you have any idea how many hours of video are in there or how many videos there are? It just goes on and on and on. It's really, I like dipping in. You know, I haven't been looking at it. I didn't start at the beginning and go through. I've just been dipping in here and there, and it's really refreshing. And, you know, I think you can kind of get the idea that when Dave starts talking, you know, he's going to give you a lot of density of information. He's just full of this, these ideas and practical experiences. He's not talking about theory. He's talking about what he's actually done. So there's a big difference there. And I think, you know, I kind of watched over his shoulder while he was creating this course. And it's true, the early videos were pretty bad. But the it really ended up to be beautiful. And it's really, you know, it's not like any other course you've seen. There's none of the push this button, then push that button. That's not what it's about. It's about understanding how and why books sell, the psychology of buyers, how to approach people who can help you amplify your message. It's just an amazing goldmine of book marketing intelligence. Now, you heard Dave say he's not trying to make money from this, which is really good for you and me, because he's selling the course, which I think, you know, I've produced courses, I've made my own courses, I've bought a number of $2,000 courses. I would say that in my estimation, this course would retail for about between $1,000 and $1,500 due to the absolute quality of the content in the course. But it's actually available for $197. I mean, and also I want you to know that Dave stands behind this course. He guarantees it. You have no risk if you want to try it out and watch some of the videos. Now, he's already eliminated the need for you to do that if you're not sure, because on the sales page, there's a whole bunch of these videos right from the course. You can see exactly what the content is. It's just a small selection of it. So Dave, you told us a little bit about why you did the course. What do you think the impact of this course is for the individual author who's sitting around saying, well, maybe I should do another update on Goodreads?
Well, I'm thrilled you asked that because obviously we've been very proud of the feedback. I mean, everybody says it's the best course they've seen. And a quick story about that. You remember Judith Applebaum? Of course, she's
I
been
know
around
her well.
forever, and you know her well. She was the former managing editor of Publishers Weekly. We sent her the course, and she said, "Dave, I'm older now. I'm not looking at this type of thing. I don't give testimonials." The next day, she sent us back an email saying, "This course is the most ridiculously good thing I've ever seen." Gave us a testimonial and put it top of a resource page. And so that kind of thing has happened a lot. But much more important to me, selfishly, than the great feedback, although I'm not above liking it, has been the impact. So many people have taken the course and they've already generated tons of interviews, tons of media coverage, special sales. They've expanded their distribution. These are very practical ideas with all the details filled in. And I think that's the difference with this. I mentioned earlier, it shows you not only what to do, but precisely how to do it. And these are ideas that have been tested not only by us over the last 5, 10, 20, 30 years, but by all the hundreds of authors we've helped. And we believe in a scientific approach to A/B testing. You and I talked while I was putting the section together on cover design and on editing your book. You can see how scientific that was and all the research that went into it. It's unusual. Those were more or less, by the way, bonus videos. I put the 38 first videos in on how to put your book together, knowing that some people have already put their book together, but I thought they'd find them interesting. I cannot believe how well those are going over. Hey, can I tell the story of why I reached out to you? Because
I'd
it's
love
you're
to
very
hear it.
humble,
Come on,
but
tell
you're humble. I want to tell it because it's an interesting one. I did not know you at all. I'd never spoken to you. You'd never spoken to me. And I reached out to you because your teachings in your books matched up to all of our testing results about covers. And so there's a couple other fairly prominent people on the cover front, but their covers didn't match up to the testing. We actually disagreed with some of the things they taught and some of the things they did. And I said to Scott, there's a guy in the States, I'm telling you, everything he preaches in his books matches up perfectly to our experiences and our testing. We should reach out to him. And I remember sending you the first video, and it was on putting the acknowledgments to your book to the back. You remember that? And you called me up after, and you said, "Okay, Dave, that was bad quality, but in terms of the content, I'm hooked." That really got me thinking, and that's how we ended up striking our relationship, and it's been fun. And I've enjoyed your work over the years, so I'm glad we're able to do this.
Well, thank you. That's very generous of you. So let's see if we've got a couple of questions that we could do before we run out of time. And here's an interesting question from Jan, who wants to know, is it important to do all these deals that you're talking about? Is it important to have a quote unquote real publisher?
Okay, no, it's not at all. In fact, if you look at the Wealthy Barber, the Looney Spoons books, all kinds of other people we've helped, I'd say 80% of the successes that we've seen out of this office have been with independently published books. But I never see any corporate sales and partnerships go through with a book that doesn't have a strong cover, a strong title, and a strong subtitle. Subconsciously, it influences the potential partner so dramatically that without it, you are in big trouble. There may be one exception, but one, remember, I'm talking 30 years of data here. So one exception is not very good. You have to have a good title, subtitle, and cover design. If you don't, if it looks amateurish, if it looks self-published, you're in big trouble. I don't think people to this day, despite all of the writing out there, understand the importance of the cover, title, and subtitle. I really don't. I'm not even sure major publishers grasp how important those three things are working together. And in corporate sales, they are so important.
I could prove that because I run a cover design competition every month and I write about this stuff endlessly. And we still see the same mistakes over and over again, whether people have educated or not. And, I've been through the sections in the course on design. They're really rock solid. And, the real advantage of what Dave is teaching in the course is that it comes directly from all his experience. I mean, he's not just making it up as he goes along here. He actually
And I'm old.
knows. Yeah, he
Yeah, and
knows.
I'm old too.
You're ancient. You're almost as old as me. So here's an interesting question from Sharon. She says she loves to hear this idea. This is about radio. She co-hosts a radio show that's in Blog Talk Radio. It's like internet
Yes.
radio
Yep.
over 5 years. And she wants to know if actually that blog talk, the internet radio, is that a useful platform, or should you focus only on live radio shows that are over the dial?
No, I think Blog Talk Radio is in essence podcasts. I mean, you're looking at a very similar type thing, different technical name. And again, they've picked up huge steam in the last 24 to 36 months. And so I think some of them can be very, very worthwhile. Frankly, if you do a lot of those, there'll be some big misses. I'm not going to lie to you. If you do some podcasts and blog talk radio shows, you'll occasionally have 13 listeners. And that may not be the best use of your time. But for the most part, again, they're the key listeners, the word of mouthers, the more likely buyers. And the odd podcast that gets you 7,000 listeners, but they're right in your target demographic. They trust the host. They're information junkies. You can't beat that. We hear stories all the time now about people who've gone on relatively small podcasts, let's say a few thousand listeners traditionally, and they've had 400 books sold through Amazon or through their website. That is not an unusual type of ratio, again, when you think through the buyer. Now, again, you want to complement the podcast visit with a solid web page and with a good Amazon page. And we talk about all those things at length in the course. And again, we're back to cover type, title, and subtitle. Hey, I just want to, I know we're rushed for time, but I want to mention something I know is close to your heart.
Yeah.
Most people's subtitles are not very good. And we've improved in titles. People put a lot of work in on titles now. And I would say the majority are quite good now. They're brandable, they're short, they're punchy, they get it. Subtitles are such an important part of selling books. If you go in and research and you talk to people in bookstores, it's amazing the influence the subtitle has on them. Yet most publishers and indie publishers put very little work in on that. Huge mistake. And they can be long, by the way, because nobody says them. It's not like they have to memorize them, repeat them with word of mouth. You're just trying to tell people what is the book about and what, again, intrigued them. The subtitle can do those things if you put the work in. Most people don't do it. Lots of good information on that in the course, by the way.
Yeah, and I'm a big fan of subtitles, particularly for nonfiction. That's really your opportunity to also improve the discoverability of your book by making sure you've got at least your main keyword in the subtitle.
For sure.
There's a lot of hacking to do on these subtitles, and I think that's a really great point. Here's a question about the book excerpts we talked right about at the beginning, because this listener was not sure what it actually looks like. When you, is it a booklet? Is it a folder? What does the book excerpt look like? It's
never looks like a folder, but it often does look like a booklet in that it is often 32 pages, 64 pages. You see them staple bound often. Sometimes they're perfect bound, but they're often staple bound. I think we have a couple here. Maureen's going to grab a couple and bring them over. So these ones are dummies excerpts, and you can see they're all smaller in size than a traditional book. This is a very good example here. That's a small book. It is perfect bound in this case, but sometimes they're only one signature, and so they'll staple bind them. You use the book's cover, and again, you can see in this case, you've got the company's name up here, and so there is the branding we talked about earlier. Almost all printers can put these together relatively inexpensively, but traditionally, some of the bigger book printers are your best bet. They tend to be able to do them quite efficiently on the cost front and turn them around relatively fast. I know I get very excited about the physical book excerpts, but it's because we're seeing so many people already have success with them. And I mean, nothing gets you more excited than deals being struck. So that's a video you want to watch very carefully.
You certainly got my wheels turning on that one, Dave. I'm already, you know, I'm resisting trying to work on it in my head while you're talking because it's too much to handle. Let's see if we got one more we can squeeze in before we run out of time. Now, I know a lot of this is related to fiction, nonfiction, but tell me if you've had any experience using any of these techniques for fiction or authors who use them and then reported back to you, perhaps.
Yeah, we've had a lot of the latter, and it's interesting. I mean, corporate sales are not going to be as strong an area for fiction. Now, there's the exceptions. There's the odd exception, especially if the book becomes very big. It takes on its own brand power. So, I mean, obviously, with the Harry Potter, if you can't figure out ways to partner with companies there, you're in big trouble. So there is some of that. But with garnering media, most of the ideas work in all genres. And we've had a number of fiction authors who bought the course and said, just from what they learned on the radio and the podcast and a few of the other areas alone, developing your website, optimizing your Amazon page, they paid for the course many, many times over. It's tougher with fiction in a lot of instances. But I'll tell you one thing with fiction you've got to do a great job of, that producer testimonial sheet. Because there is some skepticism around interviewing fiction writers because they don't know if it'll translate well to a wide audience, you have to convince the radio host, the TV host, whatever, that you're going to do a very good job of making it exciting, being articulate, having an infectious energy, and so on and so forth. Well, nothing does that more effectively than the producer testimonial. So it's a little tougher with fiction, I will admit, but there's still lots of positive things you can do. And remember, in a course like this, where there's hundreds of ideas, nobody's going to do them all. I mean, you're going to pick the 10 or 15 that make the most sense for you time-wise and make the most sense for you in the book front. So whether it's fiction or nonfiction, you're not going to do them all. So there's still lots there that can add value and make a big difference.
Well, the problem I had with the course, Dave, was I would watch one video and I'd think, well, I don't have a lot of time, but that would be so engaging and there was so many ideas in it, I immediately wanted to watch the next one.
Well, thank you.
It was kind of hard to tear myself away, and I blame you for that.
Thank you.
Say also that, you know, I really think that anybody who is interested in actually selling books should go over and look at this course. Now, what I've done is I've put the URL into the chat box in the GoToWebinar control panel, and you have to use this link. It's thebookdesigner.com/Chilton. That's C-H-I-L-T-O-N, bookdesigner.com/Chilton. And here's why. We're going to run a special promotion on Dave's course. It's $197. As I said, it's an unbelievable value. I would say if you spend 1 hour watching these videos, you will already see that the price is, you're going to make that back in like 2 minutes. So in order to incentivize you, if you're interested in pursuing this, go over and look at the course. You won't see this on the sales page, but I'm going to tell you that my partner and I, Tracy, are going to offer you a 50% off coupon at our store, authortoolkits.com, where we've got a lot of products that will help you in marketing and selling your books, things like media kits and how to, you know, the nuts and bolts of uploading to Amazon, whether you got ebooks, print books, or audio books. There's just a lot of content there that's very helpful. Now, 50% off anything you put in your cart, and you're going to get a coupon code that will allow you to get that 50% off once if you buy Dave's course. And that is going to run through Monday. Today is Thursday, so that gives you Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday to take advantage of the deal. I would buy the course anyway. So even if you don't care about the coupon, forget that. I'm just doing that as something a little extra to incentivize you, because I get calls all the time, just the way Dave does. How can you help me? What should I do now? Dave has put it all in there. It's all in the course. All you have to do is sit and watch, take notes, and try to keep your head from exploding, because that's what's going to happen. So anything you want to add, Dave? We're kind of at the 1 hour mark. So anything?
Well, I will pay you a compliment. I like your stuff. And I said to you before, I said that in the course before you and I had ever spoken. And so it's not biased by the fact we've ended up speaking after the fact, or the fact we're doing the webinar. I like it. In fact, I talked in the course about your cover templates and some of the things you've done on that front. So no, I think it's a great offer. And I'm very proud of the course. I make no effort to hide that. I'm not making any money from it, but I'm getting huge satisfaction from the impact it's having. And I think people are going to find that it will not only give them a lot of specific ideas, it'll be very motivating. It gives them a different mindset. They start realizing all the possibilities out there. So when you go to the homepage, you go to the page that you've mentioned before, make sure you watch the samples, because I think they'll get you fired up. And there's an introduction video there that I think will really explain the why behind the course very effectively. And I guarantee people are going to love the course. Every single person who's taken it has.
Well, I love it. And it's an amazing value. That's all I'm going to say about it. It's at thebookdesigner.com/Chilton. I will be emailing everyone who is on this call with a link to the replay. I'll remind you about how to get the coupon. I'll give you the link again so you don't have to worry about it. But if you click that link, it's in the chat box, and watch some of those introductory videos. They're directly out of the course, and I think you'll understand exactly what I mean when I say that it's absolutely a goldmine for anyone who wants to sell books. If you're not publishing to sell books, that's different. But those of you who want to sell more books and really see the huge world of opportunity that the book gives you to market it and sell it and make a difference in people's lives, Dave has a lot to say, and he's going to help you out. So I want to thank Dave Chilton for coming on today. I know he's a very busy guy. He took time out of his day to have this conversation. It's really been interesting. You really got my brain going, Dave. I'm going to run over there and start watching those videos on the excerpts, because I've got a book that would be perfect for. Good. And I want to thank everybody who came on the call. And I hope you go over and check this out. It's at thebookdesigner.com/Chilton. And it's really going to make a difference. It could absolutely change your whole orientation to the book publishing you're doing, and that would be a good thing. So thanks, Dave.
No, thank you. I enjoyed that immensely. I can't believe how quickly it went. Great questions, and hopefully you and I will see each other again soon. And I really hope everybody enjoys the course.
Well, thanks very much, and I'll see everyone again next time.